Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com. Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. Electronic ankle bracelets have been used to monitor paroled convicts for years. Sex offenders, domestic abusers, even Martha Stewart will have one soon. Now, these black plastic monitors, the size of a big cigarette box, are being strapped onto U.S. immigrants. The Department of Homeland Security pilot program has wired more than 1,700 asylum seekers and other immigrants awaiting hearings with the devices. If the government likes the results, many thousands more immigrants could soon be wired and monitored. The government says it needs to do this to keep the non-citizens in its sights, especially when the country's security could be at stake. But immigrant advocates describe the electronic shackles as a super invasive step, an offense to the American ideal of liberty, and a frightening example of the turn official attitudes toward immigrants have taken. Tonight on Point, the debate over head-turning new measures to keep track of immigrants and asylum seekers in America. You can join the conversation. If a non-citizen is out of compliance with U.S. immigration law, do you have a problem with slapping an electronic monitor on his or her ankle and tracking their whereabouts? What if that meant hundreds of thousands of people in America were one day ordered to wear electronic monitors? Does this sound like science fiction, an abuse of the ideal of liberty, or a better, cheaper option than jail? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now from Washington is Daniel Zwerdling. He is a longtime correspondent for National Public Radio and filed a report for Morning Edition yesterday that investigated the Department of Homeland Security's new use of the ankle monitoring bracelets. Daniel Zwerdling, thanks for being with us.
Tom, thanks for inviting me.
It was an amazing story. It just spun our heads around and really made us pay attention, Daniel, and we wanted to learn more. You had the story of a Belize national, Amilcar Daras, and his particular circumstances. We hope to get a sense of that again tonight. But before we go there, give us top level. What's going on with this new program? What is it and why is it?
Well, first of all, what made me want to look into this is that I cannot find a single other case in America where government officials have required people who've never been accused of a crime to wear electronic monitors. Mm-hmm. I've asked lawyers across the country. I asked the ACLU, who you would think would know about such things, and everybody says, no, we've never heard of such a case. So it's curious that this program has received very little attention until now. Okay, so here's how it works. Amilcar Daras, a citizen of both Belize and El Salvador originally, okay. Mm-hmm. He has dual citizenship, came to the United States 5 years ago. He said his father died, and he was now responsible for taking care of his family back in Central America.
All right.
He came here on a tourist visa, legally. Once he was here, he said, you know, I would like to settle here. May I remain here? And the government, and, you know, we could get into the details if mm-hmm. you want, but they rejected his application. They said, no, you can't stay. You have to go home.
To be formal, they ordered him deported. Is that right?
Right. They ordered him deported. That's mm-hmm. the terminology. Mm-hmm. He has hired a lawyer. He is appealing in court, which he has every legal right to do. And Homeland Security said, well, in the meantime, while you are appealing your case in court, you have to be under virtual house arrest. You must wear an electronic monitor, the exact same kind that, as you said, rapists and other convicted criminals have to wear when they're paroled sometimes. Mm-hmm. You must be in your home by 6 p.m. sharp every day, 7 days a week. You cannot step foot off your property until 6 a.m., and if you do, you will be in big trouble.
So he was, in effect, wherever he was, really not in jail, but certainly locked up, locked into that monitoring device.
Exactly. And the device, you don't take it off for a shower. It's waterproof, supposedly. If he tried to tamper with it in any way, it would alert the National Computer Center. Incidentally, what would happen is this program is actually being managed not by Homeland Security, and this is another interesting aspect of it. It's being managed by a private company called Behavioral Interventions, mm-hmm. which is just one example of the way in which the government is turning over many of its roles to private companies.
Now, we know there are big issues around immigration. There are many, many immigrants and would-be immigrants in the country. The government feels it can't keep track of all them. It certainly can't lock all of them up. There aren't enough jail spaces. So we see there's a bigger issue here. But you put a human face on this that was just remarkable. I want to begin to bring that into the background here, if I may, Daniel Zwertling. We've got a little bit of tape from your story. In this case where Amilcar Daras was talking about wearing the bracelet, and as you pointed out, this is a working man in America. He's, what, assistant manager of a quite thriving restaurant in, what was it, Minneapolis?
Yeah, he's worked his way up from being, you know, a kitchen help, dishwasher, like so many immigrants in this country. And he impressed everybody so much that he went to management training school mm-hmm. on the company's dime, and now they have handpicked him to be assistant manager of, you know, he supervises dozens of people.
So he's playing by the rules. He's managing, helping manage a restaurant, supervising lots of people. We'll hear from his boss, who thinks he's terrific. But he feels, even when he's walking around, like he's in jail. Let's listen.
These are the rules that they give. I have to follow the rules 100%.
Could you go out now to go to the store to pick up some sugar or eggs?
I can leave nowhere after 6.
Can you go to a relative's birthday party?
I can go nowhere. Right now, I feel like I'm in jail.
Amilcar Daras talking with NPR correspondent Daniel Zwerdling. I guess, Daniel, that was at his house where he was from 6 p.m. that day to 6 a.m. the next morning.
Exactly. If he walked off his property, let's say at 2 minutes after 6, his electronic bracelet, which is bigger than a package of cigarettes, it was like 4 or 5 inches square, very thick, very hard around his ankle.
Okay, so we're getting closer to a cigar box there.
Well, somewhere in between. Anyway, if he walked off his property, Tom, the anklet would send a signal to another machine that's been installed in his house, which would send a signal through the telephone, which would send an alarm to a national computer center in Anderson, Indiana, mm-hmm. and that would tell the officials who monitor him that he's breaking the rules. Mm-hmm.
There's the kind of sci-fi creepy setup. On the other hand, there is an issue with tracking and keeping track of immigrants, but the way this is being implemented is also an issue. You quoted or interviewed his boss, Eric Moore, who let us know what he thinks about it. This is what Daras has to report in 3 times a week to the company you described, Behavioral Interventions. Once, he asked to change the time of the check-in because he had an important meeting at work. They refused. His boss, Eric Moore, called Behavioral Interventions, tried to explain why Daras needed the appointment moved, and here Moore explains the reaction he got from the private contractor carrying out this electronic monitoring.
I said, well, you know, here's a manager. He was in a meeting. A regional vice president was at the meeting. He's not going to interrupt, and he was very embarrassed about the situation. And it was a point where the lady just refused to budge. So, well, he has to learn a lesson. Why would you demean a person like this, running around with an ankle break, electronic surveillance? I mean, we're supposedly engaged in a war against people who are threatening the American dream, so why would we punish those who are here to ensure it? As a veteran myself, I just, it disgusts me.
Daniel Zwerdling, what is the Department of Homeland Security's rationale? Why are they doing this?
The Department of Homeland Security asked me to talk to Victor Cerda, who's the top man in charge of this program. He's in charge of detaining immigrants in jail if government officials feel they need to be in jail, and deporting immigrants if mm-hmm. they don't get to stay here. Mm-hmm. He says, look, here's our problem. And let me start off by saying, Tom, that I'm going to say some statistics now, which we should come back and talk about.
All right.
But Victor, here's Victor Cerda's best here's his argument. I wish he were on the program now to say it.
I should say, it's interesting. Department of Homeland Security was unwilling to put someone on this program if you were on it, Daniel. So they don't like your perspective, but we're hearing what you've got to say.
Well, I think I'm disappointed they're not on, but I think what's happened is that several times Victor Cerda and others at the department have said things to me on tape, by the way, which I got back to my office to double check and found were not true. Mm. And I've reported that in a straightforward way on the air, and I think they find it a little embarrassing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyway, mm-hmm. Victor Cerda says, look, we have a very tough problem. Every year we tell at least a couple 100,000 people that they have to leave the United States.
Right.
They have to be deported. Mm-hmm. And he says that 85% of those people who are ordered deported, in fact, abscond. That's his word. They They bolt. That's another word he uses.
But inside the U.S., they don't leave the country, he's asserting.
No, exactly. They go into hiding so the government can't find them and they never get deported. Mm-hmm. So he says, look, we have two choices here. The law gives us the authority to detain any aliens who we think aren't going to follow the rules.
Right.
And by detain, that means putting them in jails. And NPR and human rights groups have revealed in recent months that many of these jails have horrendous conditions. Guards beat up the detainees who've never been accused of a crime.
Mm-hmm.
At one jail I exposed, guards were using attack dogs to terrorize and attack detainees who'd never been accused of any crimes. So Victor sort of says, okay, so we could put people in jail while the government is deciding can they stay or not, so that if we tell them to leave, well, they'll be in jail and we can just put them on a plane and, you know, there won't be any problem.
Mm-hmm.
He said, on the other hand, we don't think jail is a good option for a lot of these immigrants. By the way, he didn't say that it's not a good option because of the humanitarian problems. He said the problem with jails is that it's very expensive to keep these immigrants in jails. And jails are very crowded. They're running out of bed space. So he said, so the other option is, let's experiment putting electronic monitors on these people like Amo Carderas.
Mm-hmm.
And that way we'll know where they are every single day. And if we decide they have to leave the country, we'll know right where to pick them up.
Now, it does sound, Daniel, like the government has a quandary here. As you say, there are huge numbers. People, some portion, and I know you later went on to say maybe that 85% was not the correct number, but some significant portion abscond, using their word. There's a quandary.
Well, first of all, immigration researchers have said to me, if the American people want to solve the immigration problems, and there are a lot of them, it's important to know exactly what those problems are, and there has never been a single study that I could find, and Victor Cerda's staff couldn't show me one either, where researchers have proved that 85% of people told to leave the country abscond.
We can't find it
in a moment.
Daniel Zuerling, stand by. Daniel Zuerling with NPR. We're glad to have him tonight. We're talking about extreme new measures to keep track of immigrants and asylum seekers in America. What if one day that meant hundreds of thousands of people, and we'll hear tape on that in a moment, would be walking around wearing electronic monitors? Does this sound reasonable or like something out of science fiction? We're 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about very tough new measures to keep track of immigrants and asylum seekers in America, about ankle bracelets, 24-hour electronic monitoring, house arrest in the name of national security. You can join the conversation tonight. What do you think? Does this sound like science fiction, an abuse of the idea of liberty, or a better, cheaper option than jail? Is it time for more aggressive immigration control measures in the name of national security? Where's the line here? What's the message to the world? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I've been joined tonight by longtime NPR correspondent Daniel Zuerling. You may have heard his terrific story on Morning Edition yesterday on exactly this point. And Daniel, there's a bit of tape I wish you'd introduce for us that gives us a sense of where the Department of Homeland Security may be going with this. How it's a pilot program right now, but how widespread this nonstop monitoring might become.
Well, I was wondering, would hundreds of immigrants every year have these electronic monitors? Would thousands every year have them, perhaps? So listen to this interchange when I asked Victor Cerda, the man who's running the program, about this very issue.
So it's possible that a few years from now we could see hundreds of thousands of immigrants walking around the country wearing these ankle bracelets, at least for a time.
Yeah, I would not rule that out.
Yeah, I would not rule that out. Hundreds of thousands of immigrants wearing electronic monitoring ankle bracelets.
Victor Cerda told me that they want to study this pilot project for another 6 months or a year, and he said then they'll decide whether to, you know, expand. I want to get back to something we were talking about just a couple of minutes ago, Tom,
sure,
and that
please.
Was how many immigrants cheat? I mean, this is at the heart of this argument, and you will hear, and I think our listeners are going to hear in the coming months, Victor Cerda and other government officials saying this figure over and over and over again. So I want to dwell on it for a moment. 85% of all the immigrants who are ordered deported abscond. They bolt. They cheat.
Mm-hmm.
They hide from the government.
That's the assertion.
That's right. So I asked Victor Cerda's spokesman, well, where'd you get that figure? Because it's used in testimony before Congress. It's used in speeches. It's used in press releases.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a pretty shocking figure. Well, so they said, well, it's here. It's in this Justice Department study. Read that. Well, I read the study, and that study didn't say that. In fact, I talked to a number of immigration researchers who've read the study. I talked to two of the key investigators who actually wrote the study.
Okay.
They all agreed that what the study did find is that 85% of immigrants who are ordered to leave the country do not, in fact, leave the country. But this is not a semantic quibble.
All right.
To at least part of the problem is not that the immigrants are all cheating. Part of the problem, at least, is that the government, that the immigration agency, is so disorganized. Its records have been so badly kept. Its computer systems have been so badly kept up to date, mm-hmm. that in many cases, the government simply doesn't have, for example, an immigrant will write in and say, by the way, I've changed my address.
Right.
Somebody will put it in a file. The person who's, you know, deciding is where do we tell this immigrant that they have to go home, the address isn't in that file. So that person doesn't know the right address. So they think, oh, the immigrant's hiding. They call them an
absconder. And pretty soon it's in a kind of twilight zone.
Exactly. And I've gotten calls from lawyers since my story was on yesterday morning saying, we've had so many clients like this who sent in letters saying, folks, I've changed my address. It's on 323 Maple. And Homeland and the Immigration Service got it all mixed up and called the person an absconder falsely.
So there's organizational problems there. There's a scale issue. I mean, the homepage of U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE is the interesting acronym, says every year the Department of Homeland Security arrests over 1.6 million aliens. That's a lot of people. Dennis Wertling, as you talked with people, did you find – you must have found some who said – there are issues with the way America's borders work, with our understanding of who's in the country and who's not. I mean, I recall Richard Clark, the White House terrorism chief, made much of that when he started writing about the problems here. The 9/11 Commission looked at immigration and what happened on September 11, 2001, said we've got problems here. You don't want to put everybody in jail. Is there a sense in which this is the humanitarian solution?
Well, first of all, the problem is since nobody has ever done a good study that shows is it 20% of immigrants who cheat or is it 85% or is it 50%? Since nobody knows that figure, it seems that people are making very big, far-reaching decisions based on a lack of evidence, number one. Number two, all the immigration lawyers I talked with said, wait a minute here. Who said that the only choice is to put immigrants in jail while the government is deciding if they can stay or not, or to put them on electronic monitors? I mean, isn't there another choice? The fact is that the law doesn't require the government to put most of these people in jail. It in fact says, look, if you have an immigrant here and they're in a hearing to decide if they have to go home or
right.
not. If this person has community ties, if they've never committed a crime, if they're not involved in immoral and subversive activities, then you can parole them. That just let them out. And they don't have to be in jail.
Like your subject, Emil Cardenas.
Exactly. And the government, in fact, the Immigration Service, funded a study by a very respected institute called the Vera Institute of Justice. They said, can you figure out a way that we can make sure that most immigrants follow the rules all the time? And the institute found that just using sort of mild kind of supervision where immigrants have to call in a few times a week to a case officer, you know, say, hello, here I am, that had dramatic effects. And this institute never said a word about electronic monitors.
That came
from the people at the Department of Homeland Security. And the question is, are they really necessary?
Dennis Wertling, stand by. I want to welcome into our conversation from Miami, Cheryl Little. She's executive director of the Florida Immigrant Advocacy Center. She's represented a number of asylum applicants who have been fitted with the ankle monitoring bracelets. Cheryl Little, thanks for being with us tonight.
My pleasure.
I wonder if you can share your perspective on this. I mean, we see you're an immigrant advocate, so maybe that means you're totally opposed to this. But how do you read what's going on with the Department of Homeland Security and the monitoring devices? Is this a good idea? Is it better than being sent off to the often lousy jails that Daniel's describing? Or is this a terrible idea? How do you see it?
Well, I see it as the latest in a series of very restrictive measures that have targeted innocent asylum seekers. Whose only crime is trying to seek protection in the United States of America, a country that they continue to hold in very high regard. And I can tell you that certainly in Florida, the use of ankle bracelets has been a dramatic step backward from the release policy that had been routinely applied to the majority of asylum seekers here.
Was that release policy widely abused?
Not to my knowledge, not at all. And, you know, we have represented asylum seekers. For example, one lady from Sudan who was released after, I think, about 4 months in detention with an ankle bracelet. She was humiliated beyond belief.
How? Why?
Because she thought everybody would look at her and think she was a hardened criminal. She was always careful to wear clothing that covered the ankle bracelet. When she went to work with her sponsor who owned a business here in South Florida, he had to close his business early in order to get her home in time.
But wasn't it better than jail?
This is a woman who was eventually granted political asylum. I mean, the question should be not is it better than jail, but in South Florida, they were releasing asylum seekers who had convinced asylum officers that they had legitimate cases. They were releasing them routinely. That's what we believe they should be continuing to do. This lady said, I don't understand why they thought I was going to abscond. All I wanted was a chance to make my case. I wanted to show up in court. I wanted that judge to hear my case.
And what about the Department of Homeland Security official who told our guest Daniel Zwerdling of NPR that he could well imagine one day hundreds of thousands of immigrants in different status conditions might be wearing these bracelets? Can you imagine that? Is that the attitude of the of our immigration authorities today?
Oh, I think it very much is. And I think it's important to bear in mind that DHS officials themselves have identified persons who are eligible for these ankle bracelets as low-risk immigrants. In other words, people whom they don't believe are going to abscond or pose any kind of risk to the community.
So how do you interpret their motive in going to the monitoring?
Well, I think since 9/11, the effort on our part of our government has been to send a message that, you know, they're cracking down, they're closing our borders, you know, they're making more arrests of immigrants.
Right.
You know, terrorism is something that they're taking very seriously.
Are they wrong to do that?
Well, no. Well, I think they're wrong to be wasting precious resources targeting the wrong people. We have the former head of counterterrorism at the CIA saying, you know, programs like this really don't make a lot of sense. And, you know, when you bear in mind what Danielle was talking about, the erroneous databases, you know, and the travesties of justice that can result, it really doesn't make any sense at all. It's giving people a false sense of security. They're racking those numbers up. They're able to tell the American people, you know, that they've got all these people under control.
You've got a shackle on them.
But they're wasting precious resources targeting people whose only crime, you know, is trying to seek refuge in the United States.
Cheryl Little, Daniel Zwerdling, we have so many callers who want to join us. I want to begin to bring them in. Scott is calling from Green Bay, Wisconsin. Hi, Scott. You're on the air.
Good evening. I just want to make a couple of points.
Please.
First off, when Mr. Zwerdling says that, and your other guest, whose name I forget, I'm sorry, says that these people haven't been accused of any crime, I would go with that a little bit. If they've been ordered to leave the country and they have not done so, even though there's an administrative procedure that's in place,
they're appealing it.
Then they're not in compliance with the law at this point. At least with the order of the court at that, or the INS.
Well, it sounds. I mean, I take your point, Scott, but it does sound in the case Daniel represents that there's a legal appeal going on, so that it's
well,
not
true. Mm-hmm. True, but these are not people who are chosen utterly at random.
That's true.
Who have for one reason or another been asked to leave, and then let me make all my points.
Sure.
And then I'll,
yeah. Let's hear it. Yeah.
Hear it. Okay. So they've been ordered to leave, and they've not. At that point.
We got that one. What's your next point, Scott?
Okay, so the other point that I would like to make is that, you know, these also are not U.S. citizens. And it has bothered me for a long time, and I think a lot of people in this country, that all the protections of U.S. citizenship are extended to people who are not yet and may never be U.S. citizens. When they can apply for Social Security and they can apply for Medicare and Medicaid and all these programs, these government programs that I've got to pay taxes to support, and all they got to do is set foot on this country, and they're in. Then I think we have to think about whether or not it's appropriate, and I think it is, to have a differential level of protection for citizens versus non-citizens.
Scott, we've got it, and let us pick those up. Potent points, both. Cheryl Little, first, if I may, go to you on this big issue. Scott's saying, look, I'm an American citizen. They're not. They don't deserve all the protections that I get. We've got a situation to deal with, so it's not the same as being a citizen. How do you respond to that?
Well, they certainly don't have all the protections that Scott has. Let me just respond in a couple of ways. First of all, most of the persons here in Miami who are being released with ankle bracelets have not been asked to leave the country. Their cases are in the very early stages.
Yours are asylum seekers
earlier,
overall.
This lady was actually granted asylum months after being released in the ankle bracelets. Mm-hmm. And with respect to immigrants simply, you know, taking and not giving anything back, there's been study after reputable study, you know, that makes very clear immigrants, even those who are undocumented, many of them pay taxes. They actually give billions more to our economy than they take in services. And this is just something that I wish more people were aware of.
Come
here seeking refuge and hope. They believe so much in the American dream. They love this country.
And they get an ankle bracelet.
Many of them are fleeing terrorism in their own countries. They come here believing in due process and you know, the fundamental ideals of a democracy.
And yet there was 9/11, and many Americans are concerned about it. Daniel Zwirtling, I heard you on this deportation front. Scott saying, look, he was ordered deported. I mean, yes, he's still within the system, but shouldn't that tell us something?
What does it tell you? It doesn't tell you that he's going to cheat. In fact, Amilcar Daris, and this is not the only immigrant I looked into who's wearing the ankle bracelet, he, you know, by all accounts, he has done everything he's been told to do. There is nothing in his record that I could find that suggests that he is a cheater. I asked him point blank at one point. Yeah. I said, supposing the government orders you to leave the country. Now, you know, of course, he could say anything he wants, but he looked me straight in the eye and said, I am a man who takes responsibility seriously. I will do whatever I am told to do. You know, you said early in the program, Tom, actually,
yes.
You used the words out of compliance, that the people who are being braceleted are out of compliance.
And I may not be technically correct in that. You tell me, Dan.
Well, and as Cheryl Little just pointed out, many of the people are people who are saying, please let me live here to get away from the death squads that want to kill me back home. Nobody's saying they're out of compliance with anything. They're doing everything they're supposed to apply for asylum, and they're also being put on the ankle bracelets. I want to bring up one thing, which I forgot to mention, and that is the officials at Homeland Security will tell you accurately that, look, what we're trying to establish with these immigrants is you've got to follow the rules or else. So we're not putting an ankle bracelet on you for life. We're going to put it on you for at least 30 days. And if you follow every single rule, if you report in every day you're supposed to at exactly the time we tell you to, then we will take it off. And in fact, that's what happened to Amilcar Daris. He, you know, did everything they told him.
He didn't want to go back to that routine.
Exactly. They took him off the bracelet for a couple weeks. Mm-hmm. And that's when this sort of incident you mentioned earlier where he called and said, look, I have a very important meeting today with the corporate vice president. Could I please come in later today or tomorrow morning?
Right.
And they said nope.
That.
And so they put the bracelet back on him.
Just for asking, essentially.
And for not showing up at the exact time he was supposed to show up, even though he called in advance, according to him and his manager, and said, look, here's the situation. So it's not like he just didn't show up.
Let's get one more call here. Andrew's calling from Raleigh, North Carolina. Hi, Andrew. You're on the air.
Hi. One of the things that Cheryl failed to mention is that to the gentleman in Wisconsin, is that a lot of the violations that we're talking about here are not criminal violations. These are civil violations, and these are not criminals, even when immigrants are out of status. The majority of stuff are civil violations. And you have people who are continuing to languish in jail on civil violations of the law, who have no right to an attorney because the Supreme Court has determined that because they're in civil custody, they can't have an attorney.
Let me ask you about the Scott's perspective and the Department of Homeland Security's perspective. We've got a security issue here. We've got to be tougher on immigrants than we were. Does that change things in your mind, Andrew?
It certainly doesn't. You know, those people who would say that security is a reason to undermine the Bill of Rights and the Constitution do not deserve the liberties that those documents are designed to protect.
Even for non-citizens?
even for funds, even for non-citizens. Eric Cole just wrote a book called Enemy Aliens that discusses the way that aliens in this country are treated more and more like criminals, like outlaws, and like enemies, and their constitutional rights are fundamentally violated over and again.
David
it happened
Cole.
On September 11th. Mm. And it, eventually these things pass over to U.S. citizens because we become inured to them. It's already happened with Mr. Padilla. Mm-hmm. It's already happened with other immigrants.
That's a scary piece. Andrew, we've got a break here, but thank you for your call. Daniel Zwirtle, I know I've just got you for a few more seconds. What are you taking away from this? Is this rolling ahead full steam? Is this going to happen, do you think, with many more thousands of immigrants?
I take Victor Cerda at his word that they're still studying it, and in 6 months to a year, they'll decide whether, you know, a few thousand immigrants will wear ankle bracelets or hundreds of thousands.
Daniel Zwirtle with NPR, great to have you. Thanks for reporting, as always. It's always terrific. Thanks for being on tonight.
Thanks so much.
Daniel Zwirtle of NPR. Sherrod Little, stick with us. We're talking tonight about ankle bracelets and electronic monitoring and house arrest in the name of national security. What do you think? Does this crack the door open to the nonstop monitoring of all kinds of people in America? Maybe you one day. Where's the line here? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about extreme new measures to keep track of immigrants and asylum seekers in America, about ankle bracelets, 24-hour electronic monitoring, and house arrest in the name of national security. You can join the conversation tonight. What do you think? Where's the line here? Can we have liberty, security, and immigrants without electronic shackles? Or is this the price of security today? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I've been joined tonight from Miami by Cheryl Little. She's executive director of the Florida Immigrant Advocacy Center. We're joined now from Seattle by Lori Rosenberg. She's a former member of the Board of Immigration Appeals from 1995 to 2002. She now practices immigration law and serves as a consultant to other immigration attorneys. Lori Rosenberg, thank you for being with us tonight.
Good to be with you, Tom.
And we are also joined tonight from far-off Tokyo, Japan, by Jan Ting. He's a professor of law at Temple University Law School in Philadelphia, currently teaching at Temple's campus in Japan. He was a former assistant commissioner of the INS from 1990 to 93. He teaches and writes on issues of immigration and national security law. Jan Ting, I know it's a different time of day there, but thanks for being with us.
Hi, Tom. It's a pleasure.
You've been hearing a lot of this, Jan, and I know you may have a bit more tolerant view of this monitoring than the thrust we've been hearing tonight. How do you see what's going on?
Well, absolutely. I think it's been a very one-sided conversation so far. I don't think this bracelet measure is extreme in any way. And indeed, if you go to the NPR website, you can hear Daniel Zwirtle's interview of a Liberian asylum seeker named Sarah Berry, and you can hear the tape as to how happy she is when the bracelet was put on her instead of being detained. She was so happy she hugged the immigration officer. The point that I want to make, though, is that every alien who's in this program has been charged with immigration violations. Now, they're
asylum
in the process.
Seekers?
They're going to have their chance to, but they've been already charged by the government with immigration violations.
Even the asylum seekers, just to clarify?
Absolutely. They're out of status. They're in a process by which, if their asylum claim is rejected, they're going to be removed. Now, whether the absconder rate is 85% or 65% or 45%, it is a high number. And the critical issue, the larger question that Daniel referred to, is whether
yes.
we should have an immigration control system or not. You know, whether we should have open borders mm-hmm. and let everyone in who wants to come in. If we're going to have a restrictive immigration system that says some people can come in and some people can't, you've got to answer the question. What do you do with the people who are not selected to come into the United States but come in anyway? And if the answer is we're going to let them all stay, then what you have is open borders, which is fine if that's what you want. But if you want a restricted immigration system, you have to have some kind of enforcement.
Jan Ting, let me ask you.
It's good that the government is doing these kinds of experiments to save the taxpayers' money. If they weren't doing these experiments, you know, I would feel as a taxpayer, gosh, we're not getting our money's worth.
Jan Ting, let me ask you, do you have any idea how many so-called absconded immigrants who were ordered deported but stayed in the country, how many are there in the United States today?
Well, the government estimates around 400,000. People are not surprised that there are 10 million illegal aliens in the United States. Everyone seems to know that. But they are surprised that there are 400,000 who have actually been brought before an immigration judge who's issued a removal order. They've exhausted all their administrative and judicial appeal rights, and they're still in the United States. States. Now, there may be a few that are, you know, lost address cases or something like that, but, you know, it's a very large number. It's a serious problem. The government has got to do something about it. Mm. They can't detain everyone, and they shouldn't detain everyone, and it sounds to me like a pretty good program. I, again, urge everyone to go listen to Sarah Berry, the Liberian asylum seeker, talk about how she feels about the ankle bracelet. She thinks it's a terrific idea, much better than being in detention.
She thinks it's better than jail. Lori Rosenberg, how do you see what's going on with this pilot program and where it may be headed?
Well, I'll tell you, Tom, I think that the real issue is a question of enforcement. And I don't think that anyone here in the conversation, as far as I've heard it so far, is talking about open borders or anything like that. I think what we're talking about is enforcement. And enforcement means responsibilities for following the law. And I've worked, I suppose, both in the government and as an attorney representing clients who were bringing claims before the government. And I think we really have a problem here, because my understanding of this whole issue is that it's largely a product of the ineptitude of the former INS and the current ICE.
I mean, they're so disorganized they can't keep track. But surely if all these immigrants were dutifully just reporting to immigration offices as they're supposed to, it wouldn't be hard to keep track of them.
Well, but that's not exactly true, because I think part of the problem is, number one, we don't put an ankle bracelet on everybody who's a new person that moves into our community, because the police can't go out and get them if they violate the law. And that's what I fear we're looking towards when we allow a federal agency that receives an extremely high amount of funding,
mm-hmm.
no matter what its tasks are, and we allow them to say, basically, we can't do our job of finding the people that we need to find, and so let's just stop everybody first, and let's take the preventative, preemptive approach and put an ankle bracelet on everyone.
So kind of easy way out, instead of really following people up, just slap a bracelet on them and monitor them sort of Big Brother style, and you've got them.
That's right. And I think it's also an important thing to say in this conversation tonight that, in fact, although the government may bring charges against someone who's an asylum seeker, in fact, that person who's coming here for protection is not supposed to be penalized for violating the law. We have signed an international treaty along with many other nations, and our Supreme Court has said that when we put that into domestic law, the Asylum Act, the Refugee Act of 1980, that our government's efforts in doing that was so that we could be in compliance with the international law. And what the international law says is that an asylum seeker, someone who has to flee to another country to seek protection, mm-hmm. should not be penalized.
But what about, we take your point there, but what about the 400,000 who are supposedly absconded in the country in an era of terrorist threat? Isn't that an issue? And if it's cheaper, even if it's easier to put the ankle bracelet on, if it's a national security issue, do you see no argument for it?
But the ankle bracelet is only going to secure that the government is possibly able to locate a person in order to remove them. It really is not going to help us deal with the issue of the number of 400,000, which I'm not quite sure is correct. You know, there are an awful lot of people, in my experience, both while I was with the government and being outside, mm-hmm. as I am now, mm-hmm. there are an awful lot of people who the government has just lost track of, and that doesn't mean that they're roaming around unlawfully. It means that they've become a lawful permanent resident. Perhaps they've even become naturalized and are a citizen. It's just that the records aren't straight, and so we don't know what their status is today.
Let me take another call here. Amitava is calling from Lynn, Massachusetts. Hi, Amitava. You're on the air.
Hi. Good evening.
Good evening.
Great show, as always. So I'm a postdoctoral fellow at Harvard University, and I'm an immigrant.
All right.
I'm obviously concerned about these new measures. Mm-hmm. My question is, where do the authorities draw the line? As an alien, I know there are so many ways an immigrant can lose his or her status and then can go absconding theoretically.
Mm-hmm.
What prevents the authorities from putting a bracelet right around the ankle of immigrants, right at the port of entry, you know, just in case.
Just in case. So even if you're in graduate school, you slip out of compliance and suddenly, or maybe even before then, there's the question. Amitava, thanks for your call. Share a little, if I may. You know, here's an immigrant who's studying in graduate school in the U.S., and he knows how easy it is to get, out of status. How far do you think this might go? Can you imagine, as Victor Serta told Daniel Zwertling, maybe hundreds of thousands wearing these bracelets?
You know, I just want to go back to a couple of what I think are important points.
We can go back, but I don't want to ignore Amitava's question. Can you speak to it first, please?
Well, that's what I'm going to try to
Great,
do.
Great, thank you.
I don't think that rounding up 400,000 people whose worst crime is committing a civil violation, it really has much to do at all with national security in this post 9/11 world. And many of these people probably, I mean, we've spoken to dozens of people in the Miami area who didn't even know they had final removal orders because when their court hearing date came up, they didn't get that notice because it wasn't sent to the right address.
Right, we've got that. How far do you think it might go, to speak to our caller's question?
Well, you know, in terms of how many people do I think might end up with ankle bracelets?
Well, is there the kind of attitude that would say, as Amitava suggests, well, let's just put one on when you arrive. That way we won't
Absolutely.
Have to...
Listen, when we met with Miami immigration officials about this program a couple of years ago, they told us their goal was to ensure that every asylum seeker in Miami would only be released with an ankle bracelet. In other words, they would no longer be released as they have been in the past because they were identified as low-risk people who they did not believe would abscond and who they did not believe were going to be a threat to our community. Mm. They would only be released with the ankle bracelet. I think that's the goal.
Genting, what do you make of this? Here we have... an immigrant graduate student, the kind of brain power, quite possibly, that the United States wants and needs to attract to this country. Now he's listening and thinking, gosh, am I going to be tagged with one of these bracelets one day? I mean, is there a cost to the country? You describe the security issues and the cost issue of jailing, but is there a cost to the country of sending out this kind of message? We're going to tag you and monitor.
I want to reassure the caller that no one is talking about it. I think it's just a scare tactic to suggest that people who are legally in the country are going to face any sort of enforcement measures. Clearly, this program is targeted only at people who are out of status, who the government feels are in fact deportable. And so those are the only people that are involved in this program. And to me, it doesn't have really anything to do with national security. I haven't been talking about national security. It has to do with whether we have an enforceable system of immigration law or not.
Well, the Department of Homeland Security certainly frames it in national security terms. I'm looking at their web page here, and it's got security all over it, right around this policy.
Well, I mean, I think they do that probably for a variety of bureaucratic reasons. It certainly helps them increase their funding, which they need. That's an agency that's historically underfunded, understaffed, and overtasked. So they have some serious problems. But I think that what we're really fundamentally talking about is whether we're going to have a functioning immigration system or not, or whether we're going to have an immigration system that basically leaks like a sieve and doesn't really perform the function that it was designed for.
What about Lori Rosenberg's suggestion that the immigration authorities simply do their job more effectively, that would be a viable option to all this braceleting? Do you agree or not?
Well, I mean, it's easier said than done. You know, I guess my question to all the critics of the bracelet program is, explain in detail what your alternative is. We have a high rate of absconding, regardless of what the exact percentage is, and the number of absconders in the country is increasing. It's not going down. I mean, that 400,000 number used to be 300,000.
Mm-hmm.
So the number is going up. It's not going down, and somebody's gotta fix this problem. I think it's very responsible of the government to be running experiments to figure out, is there a reasonable cost way that we can get this problem under control? And again, if the government wasn't doing this kind of experiments, I think we as taxpayers all ought to feel that we weren't getting our money's worth.
Mark is calling from Jamaica Plain, Massachusetts. It looks like we may have lost Mark. Let's get another call here. Let's turn to Jim calling from Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Hi, Jim. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you. I just wanted to comment that we are at war. We have been attacked on our soil. And one of the last times this happened, we turned to internment camps and put Japanese people that had committed no crimes, took their property away and put them in internment camp.
Of course, there have been major apologies from the U.S. government right at the top for that in the years since.
Well, I think this is a wonderful alternative to that. So I also think that if I did live in Palestine, Yemen, or one of these countries, and I wanted to get my family out of there for whatever reason, which I would, I would be happy to wear an ankle bracelet for, you know, numerous years and even put them on my kids if I had to get them out of that type of a terrible environment. And I think it's an alternative, and I'm going to go buy some stock in whatever companies make this stuff.
The behavioral interventions, I think it's called, the ones that monitor them anyway, Jim. Thanks very much for your call. Larry Rosenberg, you know, there you hear the kind of perspective that seems to be somewhere behind the Department of Homeland Security's thinking here. We've got a security problem, and we've got to take steps. And, hey, wearing a bracelet is worth it if it means getting your family into the U.S.
I think we're falling prey to a lot of hysteria, and, you know, we're using words fast and loose in terms of who's a fugitive, who's an absconder. You can see the word fugitive repeated many times also on the ICE and DHS websites. And the fact is, what is our definition of those terms? And the fact is also, to what extent is there any record proof or any indication, even now, that people who are potential asylum seekers are tending to abuse our laws rather than just simply coming here in all honesty because they're able to do so under a treaty that we've pledged to give protection to people whose countries cannot protect them.
Let me get
That's
one more
all
call
these people
here, Jim.
Are doing.
James is calling from Boston. Hi, James. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I'm just worried about how far we're going to go with this. I have three non-American children and one American.
Mm-hmm.
My youngest non-American is actually 7 years old, and it takes 7 years for her to become an American citizen.
Yes.
Does that mean she's going to spend 7 years of her life with an ankle bracelet?
Well, does she
That's
have
where my concern is where it's going forward.
Right. James, thanks for your call. Cheryl Little, I mean, if anyone who is an immigrant, you can imagine how this sounds. It can't sound good. Genting raises a lot of issues about the difficulty of accomplishing this and the parameters that the country's facing. Yet I wonder if isn't an issue about the face the U.S. shows the world as well with the policy.
Well, I do want to point out that the Vera Institute program that Danielle referred to earlier, the pilot supervision program that was put in place to look into alternatives to detention in New York,
yes. Mm-hmm.
The study they conducted found that 93% of asylum seekers appeared in immigration court through its appearance assistance program. And, you know, one of my concerns is, again, I mean, we're just assuming now, as Lori pointed out, that people are going to abuse the system. And so we're punishing them for a crime we think they're going to commit. And I just don't think that's the American way.
Genting, last word goes to you tonight. You say
we know some people. We know some people are going to abuse the system. But again, I want to reassure the last caller that I think the critics of this program are needlessly frightening legal immigrants and people who are in the United States legally. This has nothing to do with people who are in the United States legally. It has everything to do with making the immigration system work, function the way it's supposed to function, the way the Congress and the American people want it to function.
Well, there it is. It's not a pretty picture from an American point of view, but you can hear the debate about exactly why or whether it's necessary. Cheryl Little in Miami at the Florida Immigrant Advocacy Center, thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Thanks for having me.
And Lori Rosenberg in Seattle, former member of the Board of Immigration Appeals, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
And Jan Ting in Tokyo tonight, but a professor of law at Temple University, former assistant commissioner of the INS, thank you for being with us.
Thanks a lot, Tom. My pleasure.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR, National Public Radio.